Hey, so I'm responding to a critique of panpsychism and a critique of myself personally. A listener sent this to me, and I watched it for the first time for Patreon subscribers. So this is the second time I'm watching this. So let's just get started.
Who are you, Seth? What's up? You look a bit perturbed. What's going on?
New neighbor drives me crazy. He's this weird self-proclaimed philosopher who keeps talking about Pamuism using an endless array of fancy words. He's a Star Trek technobabbler and he drives
Oh, come on now, Isa. He can't be that bad. Come on. Let's start it up. Let's check it out.
But of course, materialists and property dualists and the like simply postulate non-conscious matter as primitive. They rarely make arguments in support of its existence or explain why they think it should be our theoretical primitive.
Oh dear. He really is a Star Trek technobabbler, isn't he?
Yeah, so get ready for that level of cringe basically the entire time. I mean, I'm going to try not to, I'll try to stick to substance, but like, I mean, it's just so cringy and it doesn't stop. Any elaborated form of naturalism will hold that some features of the natural world are primitive, meaning they are not susceptible to further explanation. Matter is taken to be primitive by materialists, but you don't need to take matter as primitive. You don't really get anything out of it, and it happens to cause a bunch of problems if you do.
Behold, the Metarus Neanderthalensis in its naturalist habitat. Sorry, foreigner humor. Naturalism, at its core, is the idea that the universe works based on natural laws, and not some supernatural divine something. You can get into all sorts of fancy brain twisters based on that idea, such as how you acquire knowledge, or what is included in that knowledge, and what isn't, but naturalism itself makes no claim about what should or should not be explained. Likewise, materialism is the idea that matter and the interaction of said matter is how nature works. It too doesn't specify how simplistic, sorry, primitive.
Okay, so get ready for a lot of that, just like completely misunderstanding basic terms that I kind of thought everyone understood. Like, when I should have said like fundamental, like, I guess that's more recognized. But the thing is, like, I explained what I meant by primitive in the video that they're quoting, you know, they're playing clips of. Like, I mean, she really seems to think that when I said primitive, I meant simplistic, which is like, then my sentence would just be like incoherent. Like, what would that even mean? Taking matter as simplistic. Like, obviously, I meant fundamental. And then I even said, you know, it was like, comma, meaning it's not, you know, susceptible to further explanation or reduction. So not really picking up on context clues, but also just like not understanding a term that's like, you know, it's not even like you need to know about philosophy of mind. Like, you just need to be familiar with like philosophy and just science generally. Like, I thought that was a term that anyone would understand, but you know, but even if it isn't, I explained what it meant like right after. But she seems to think that primitive is a fancy word for simplistic, which is just like a crazy oversight, especially when I defined the term like in the video, which something they come to kind of over and over in this, and it is a little bit my fault. I take responsibility that the video that they're commenting on is called Panpsychism in 7.5 minutes. So you could easily get the impression by seeing that title that this is like a quick introduction to panpsychism, you know, which it is, but for people who have some level of background knowledge in philosophy, like, and in philosophy of mind, which I thought was pretty self-evident, but apparently not. So I've since added a little disclaimer where I just say, look, I assume that you have some background knowledge in philosophy and in philosophy of mind. This is not like an intro for people who have like literally never heard of the concept of panpsychism and have never thought about philosophy of mind, you know, with regards to like materialism versus substance dualism versus neutral monism, you know, like property dualism or Russellian panpsychism. Like, I'm assuming that someone has, you know, read or listened to, or, you know, just has some familiarity with like the basics of this conversation about how to explain consciousness. So I've added that disclaimer.
Sad matter is supposed to be. You're right to say that some people like to simplify things, but that is their personal preference. It is not part of the idea.
You don't really get anything.
Okay, so look, this is such a basic point that in any model of reality, there are going to be fundamental things. There are going to be theoretical primitives, which is the common vernacular for that sort of thing. Something that's like not caused by something else or explained by something else or reducible to something else. Like, it's sort of a basic constituent of your model. And that's common to every model. Okay, so naturalists disagree about what should be taken as theoretical primitives, you know, as something that's fundamental, that's not susceptible to further explanation or reduction or something like that. So what I said in the intro was that, you know, materialists, it tends to be like an assumption that like, well, of course we try to get consciousness from non-consciousness. And what I'm trying to do is question that assumption, because that's basically what it is. Most, like, as I alluded to, arguments are not usually made for taking, you know, the structure that physical science tells us about, the intrinsic nature of that structure, to be wholly non-experiential. It's sort of taken as a matter of course. And what I was trying to do was question that assumption. Anyway, but that obviously wasn't clear.
And it happens to cause a bunch of problems if you do.
You are right. Simplification can come
out of it.
At personal preference. It is not part of the idea.
You don't really get anything out of it, and it happens to cause a bunch of problems if you do.
You are right. Simplification can cause problems.
Again, we're not talking about simplification. You have no idea what we're talking about.
Sometimes. For example, if you stick to inches to make fencing, you will not run into any major problems. However, if you put microchips, working in inches just won't do the trick.
This has nothing to do with anything.
Having said that, naturalism and materialism don't inherently require you to dumb down the concept of matter, nor does any other framework inherently.
We're not talking about dumbing down the concept of matter. Again, no idea where she's getting this from, other than her just misunderstanding of the word primitive.
Stop you from dumbing things down.
Physics does not require us to take matter as primitive. The laws and equations of physics are just that, laws and equations. They're abstract.
Yes, laws and equations are abstractions. In fact, mathematics is an abstraction. They use something that exists and turn it into well-understood language that allows us to pass that knowledge on and others to check whether or not we are right. You know what else is language and abstractions? Words. No matter how freaking precise your panpsychism weasel words could ever be, and I doubt they are.
I haven't even gotten to panpsychism at this point. Like, I'm using terms that are, like, you know, pretty widely recognized. Like,
they too are an abstraction of reality, making them no better than what you try to discredit.
They discredit.
Okay, again, cringe aside, I'm not trying to discredit physics. I mean, like, again, you just have to have so. I am not trying to discredit physics. What I'm talking about is structuralism. Structuralism about physics and about physical science, which is a component of Russellian monism, which, again, I assume that people had heard of in this video. Yeah, it's just the information that physics provides us is in some important sense limited. It just tells us about structure and behavior and what matter does, but not necessarily what matter is. That's part of Russellian monism, which is named, we're coming to this later, but it's named after Bertrand Russell. It's, you know, based on a book he wrote called The Analysis of Matter. And yeah, structuralism, by the way, is not just, you know, confined to panpsychists or Russellian monists. It's like, it's a pretty common thesis in philosophy of science. It's just that what physics tells us about is behavior and structure and relations, But there might be more to matter than structure. You know, there might be something that has the structure. You know, there might be something that the thing is in itself, as opposed to just what it does. So, I mean, that's part of the thesis of Russellian monism. That part is slightly more contentious, but I'm just describing structuralism right now. I'm not attempting to discredit physics. It's a particular position in philosophy of mind. Like, the idea that structuralism is like an attempt to discredit physics is insane, held by no one. It's just a totally illiterate thing to say.
Describe something concrete, but they don't tell us what that concrete reality is. They just tell us what that concrete reality will do under certain conditions.
Yeah, that's another way of putting it, is like, physics describes something, we don't know what, some concrete reality in a very like abstract language, like gnomic language having to do with laws, or you know, mathematical language. Like, that's very abstract. It refers to something concrete, but it doesn't tell you what that concrete reality is in itself, you know, what the intrinsic nature of that concrete reality is. It just tells you what it does. So, again, like, I'm not saying that's the end of the story. There's nothing else to talk about. But, yeah, there's a concrete reality. Physics is a description of some concrete reality. It can predict the behavior of that concrete reality, can tell you how to manipulate it, can help you build all this wonderful technology. But what you're doing is you're talking about structure, behavior, relation, and things like that. But there might be more to matter than structure. There might be something that has or exemplifies the structure.
Physics does tell us what something is and how it interacts with its surroundings. That's...
Okay, so you disagree with structuralism about physics. Cool.
The whole purpose of physics.
No.
But I slowly get what argument you're driving at. It reminds me a bit of my ethics professor in university. He gave me the highest possible mark at my final exam.
Okay, take note of what she just said. He gave her the highest possible mark. Just put a pin in that.
Because in order to hide the fact that I didn't study for the test, I told him, or tried to convince him, of the difference between getting bigger and grow. Because you see, you cannot see the tree grow. You can see the tree getting bigger. You can put a camera there and film it. You can cut off a piece and put it under a microscope and see the cell split. But growing itself cannot be studied. And quite frankly, I found that argument as ridiculous as I find this. Because growing in this context is the process of getting bigger. There is no magical transcendental growthness to it in any way, shape, or form. But then again, I wasn't really upset about the mark.
Why would you be upset about the mark? I thought you said it was the highest mark. Like, is there some kind of like lost in translation thing? Like, what did I miss something there? The highest possible mark. So you got the best grade possible, but you weren't upset about getting the best grade possible despite not studying? Like, again, maybe I'm just misunderstanding, but like, that doesn't make any sense.
Of our surroundings, based on the preset definition that we use to establish what we're actually talking about. The fact that for the purpose of clarity, we stick to those definitions doesn't mean we can't explore and research the defined things in a different instance or from a different perspective. Philosophy has this awful habit.
Oh, here we go. I mean, like, you could have guessed this was coming. It's not just a problem with panpsychism. It's not just a problem with, you know, philosophy of mind. We have this, you know, anti-philosophical attitude, which seems to come with this sort of aesthetic on YouTube, which, again, I didn't know that this sort of thing still existed. Like, this genre of video, I thought was like confined to like 2014 or something, but I guess it's still going on. But yeah, this like anti-philosophical attitude, I mean, I'm pretty sure this is like an atheist channel. Ugh, it's just an embarrassment.
The simplest thoughts into other words not compassed, and whenever the putrid whiff it produces sounds fancy enough, it pats itself on the back for its sophisticated and profound thinking. Well done, philosophy. Well done. Call me a pleb and a brute and every YouTube banned word of the alphabet, but in my opinion, if you can't explain something plainly, it means you didn't properly understand it yourself in the first place.
We can.
I am explaining it plainly. I mean, at a certain point, there's just not much else I can do. Like, it reminds me of this, there's a scene in Kurt Vonnegut's, I think it's Breakfast of Champions, or no, I think it might be Cat's Cradle. It's been a while since I've read Vonnegut, but there's this part where there's a scientist who says, you know, if you can't explain it to a five-year-old, or if you can't explain it simply, then that person is a charlatan. And then the person who's talking to is like, what's a charlatan? Which is a pretty funny way to make the point that that sentiment, even though it has this like prima facie like plausibility or like, you know, it makes sense at first blush, but it's like, that's not true. Like if you can't explain it to a five-year-old or if you can't explain it to someone like this who has, you know, just zero clue what they're talking about, is not like even remotely initiated into like the conversation about philosophy of science or consciousness. Like, yeah, if you can't explain these really complex ideas to them and they don't get it right away, then you don't understand it. It's like, no, I understand what I'm saying perfectly well, thank you. And so do lots of other people. You don't, but, and you know, like some of that has to do with me not being a perfect or even good communicator. But look, there are so many basic misunderstandings in this video. And it's just like, I cannot be held responsible for you not understanding really basic things about philosophy. And if you don't care to know about philosophy, which you obviously don't, I mean, you think that the whole thing is just a, you know, it's just saying fancy words and, you know, making simple points in fancy words and we pat ourselves on the back for that. You don't have any interest in this subject. So like the idea that I'm supposed to be able to explain complex ideas about the nature of physics to someone who doesn't care to understand, like, no, that's not true. It's not on me, you know, if I can't explain it in a way where it instantly clicks with you.
It means you didn't properly understand it yourself in the first place.
We can fill in the abstract structural skeleton that physical science tells us about with any concreta we like.
Translation. Anything that we haven't yet researched enough to fully explain, or that has been fully explained but we don't know about, can be filled with voodoo at our discretion.
Okay, so, no. I mean, first of all, the woo-woo that you're talking about is consciousness, which we know exists. And secondly, I'm saying that and this is a point that's recognized by so many people. Like, you know, even if you don't call yourself a structuralist or a Russellian monist or something, like, people recognize that, you know, the mathematical language of physics is abstract. You know, like, there's something concrete that it refers to, but just describing what something will do, how to manipulate it, doesn't necessarily tell you what it is. You know, it doesn't tell you everything you might want to know about that thing. Like, yeah, there's some concrete reality that is being referred to when we are, you know, providing our like quantitative abstract description. Like Stephen Hawking has this one quote that is, you know, pretty well known where he says like, you know, basically the point I'm making, and then he says like, you know, what breathes fire into the equations and creates a universe for us to describe? So this is a pretty widely recognized point. It has nothing to do with woo. Like, again, just not in on the basics of this conversation, which extend way beyond panpsychism. This is not just like, oh, you didn't do your homework on panpsychism, which she didn't, as we'll see. But yeah, it's just like you're walking into the middle of a conversation, not understanding, and then getting mad at everyone around you. It's like, well, look, you walked into the middle of the conversation. I don't know what to tell you.
Sorry, but no. If there is such a thing as reality, then it is as it is, regardless of how you look at it.
Do you think I disagree with that?
And if there is no such thing as reality, then no matter what you come up with to describe it, will be false and utterly useless.
Oh my god.
Because there is no reality.
Does that make sense?
I have a very, very horrible suspicion about this. Are you gonna go personal experience on me? Please don't go personal experience on me. Don't do it. Please.
What fleshes out the structure that science tells us about?
More science. At least if you want it to be accurate.
Ask silly questions. Get silly answers.
I mean, like, what fills in? So what is the concrete reality that scientific description refers to? More science. Oh, thanks for that. Makes sense. That is a coherent answer.
Verse to describe.
The universe. However, in this context, I think the question is far more, what do we accept as a description of the universe? And far less, what does actually describe it? Can a universe, for example, be described by its characteristics, its behavior, and its content? Maybe, possibly, probably, very likely. But I bet there are a lot of people who are not satisfied with that. They might want a god and a purpose and some other transcendental spiritual fizzy stuff. But the problem between wanting something to be real and something actually being real is that often they just don't. Much.
Wow.
We could take this.
Let me get my fucking notepad. Just because I want it to be true doesn't mean it's true. Thank you. I've never thought of it that way.
Concrete reality to be non-experiential stuff, as physicalists do.
God
or we could take it to be experiential stuff, like Rosalian panpsychists do.
Experience! I knew it! I asked you not to go experienced on me, and you totally did it. You ignored me. How could you? Oh, well, I guess I have to go there then.
This is one of the most baffling parts of the video. So earlier she goes, please don't go personal experience on me. You know, don't make an argument from personal experience. And then she seems to think that is what I'm doing. And I say this.
Actually being real is that often they just don't match.
We could take this concrete reality to be non-experiential stuff, as physicalists do, or we could take it to be experiential stuff, like Rosalian panpsychists do.
Experience!
Okay, so I said the word experience, and from that she seems to have taken me to be making an argument from personal experience, which is quite possibly the most baffling mistake in this video. I mean, like, in no way, shape, or form am I making an argument so, like, an argument from personal experience, like, in the context of, like, theism, for instance, is, like, you have a personal experience of God. You're taking that experience to be reliable or trustworthy in some way, so you take God to exist. I am not having an experience of panpsychism being true. I don't have an intuitive experience of panpsychism being true. That would be crazy. I don't even know what that would mean. Like, I've heard of at least one person, Timothy Sprigg, who claims to have had an intuitive experience of panpsychism, at least, like, in fleeting moments here and there. But, like, that is very unusual. The way that people get to panpsychism is by way of analytic philosophy, like trying to solve the hard problem and a couple other related problems. The abstract, like, mathematical, causal language of physics could be referring to some concrete reality that is non-experiential, or it could be referring to some concrete reality that is experiential. It could have a non-experiential intrinsic nature, like most physicalists think, or it could have an experiential intrinsic nature. We already know we already know that the intrinsic nature of some matter is experiential because you're made of matter and nothing else. And I don't think that consciousness is just, you know, fully characterizable in terms of structure and behavior. Like, I think that consciousness is like a candidate for being an intrinsic nature for reasons that I'm trying to avoid going into at the moment. But the point is, we already know that, you know, physical stuff is experiential. Like, it's sort of, I don't want to say identical, but it just sort of is. Like, experience and physical events just are one and the same, at least some of the time, if you're, you know, a monist, which I am. And I take it these people are, you know, some sorts of, they're materialists of some sort. Anyway, I'm not making an argument from personal experience. I just used the word experience.
I knew it. I asked you not to go experience on me.
I mean, experience is the thing that we're trying to explain. I mean, like, that's the thing that we're both... I mean, that's the subject of this discussion.
Oh, Danny, you ignored me. How could you?
This is just so crazy.
Oh, well, I guess I have to go there then, Granny. I'm sorry to break it to you, but brains suck. Your perception is not reality. It is a bunch of neuron twirl bookalofizzing spiced with personal bias. Let me showcase this.
It has nothing to do with what I'm
Imagine
saying.
Imagine two people sitting on a bench and a bird flying by. One swears that he saw a robin and the other swears that he saw a woodpecker. The bird won't just shapeshift from robin to woodpecker all of a sudden. It's gonna stay whatever bird it was in the first place. Unless it's a UFO, of course.
Yeah, these extraterrestrial technology projecting themselves in the shape of birds is what they did.
I will be the first to admit that you can't just take an authoritative source on any matter, scientific or otherwise, because, quite frankly, there's a lot of woo-woo going on, even among the Homo professoriensis. But at the same time, you can't just blindly trust your own perception, either.
I don't perceive panpsychism to be true. It just has to do with the avoiding of the hard problem of consciousness. I'm trying to explain the data without any explanatory gaps. This has nothing to do with an argument from personal experience, nor do I perceive panpsychism to be true. It's not an experience I have. I don't have like an intuitive, like most people have an intuitive experience of something like dualism to be true, where it's like, I have an experience that's different from all matter. And like, that's the experience that most of us have. Even if you are a materialist or something else, that's just kind of the manifest image. Like, that's like Paul Bloom says, we're natural born dualists.
Just because we are forced to rely on our brains on a daily basis doesn't mean that they're actually reliable. I mean, there is a reason why we have standardized measuring tools, just to give an example.
Both approaches can explain the data of science, including the data of neuroscience.
At this point, I feel the need to define panpsychism. And since you don't define it, I'm left with using a definition you...
Yeah, again, that should have been a hint, maybe, that I was assuming that people had heard of panpsychism. That this was not, like, an intro, hey, people who've never thought about this once ever in their lives, watch this video. Like, maybe... again, I added a disclaimer to the podcast episode and to the video that they're playing clips of that says, like, look, I assume some level of background knowledge here. So, and the thing is, I did define panpsychism, like, throughout, again, if you're capable of, like, you know, picking up on context clues, if you have, like, you know, basic reading comprehension, then I do define panpsychism. But I don't just say panpsychism is, and then, you know, give like a definition as if someone has never heard of it before. But you can clearly pick up through the context what I think panpsychism is. Like, it's pretty clearly laid out in this, you know, not very long video.
You may or may not agree with, but that's your own fault. You should have included explanation and not let Google do that job for you.
I did include explanation.
Panpsychism is the view that everything-ish has some sort of consciousness, or at least consciousness-like qualities. Okay, so far so good. Now that we know what we're talking about, let us get back to the claim.
Both approaches can explain the data of science, including the data of neuroscience.
There's a lot of explanations for a lot of different things. You can explain earthquakes with the friction between tectonic plates, or you can explain them with the ire of the almighty invisible cloud guru. Both can explain the incident. It just happens to be that one of them is verifiable, and the other one, not so much.
They're both forms of motion.
I mean, I guess I'll just say that's not a very good analogy. I'm repeating myself at this point, but it's like, look, the structure that physical science tells us about, there is something that exemplifies that structure. There is some concrete reality that the abstract descriptions refer to. we don't know the intrinsic nature of that concrete reality. You know, you have to reason about whether we should take it to be some concrete non-experiential thing or some concrete experiential thing. You take it to be a concrete non-experiential thing because you're a materialist. I don't. I try to make arguments for that. Yeah, but like, this is not something that science can settle, because these are both metaphysical positions that go beyond science. Materialism is a metaphysical position that goes beyond what science can confirm or disconfirm. It is speculative, you know, and you have to make arguments in support of it. You have to give reasons in support of it, because science can't tell you that materialism is true. Again, it's a metaphysical claim that goes beyond what science even can tell you about in principle. So what I'm highlighting now is that, like, arguably science does lead us to monism, where we have, you know, physical causal closure, where there's only like one stuff, you know, in this general vicinity of my brain and body and stuff. There aren't two things here that are like irreducibly distinct from one another. There's just one thing. So that narrows it down to monism, but panpsychism is a form of monism. Physicalism is a form of monism. Neutral monism, you know, is also a form of monism. There are, you know, arguably this is also consistent with property dualism. So it's just, you know, as long as it's epiphenomenal. So it's just like, you know, she's just not keeping up with like what discussion is even happening. She's not keeping up with what we're talking about on like any level.
Monism, so physicalists cannot appeal to the success of the core theory, causal closure, or the dependence of the human mind on the brain as evidence favoring physicalism over Russellian panpsychism.
We've been searching for days.
This is my favorite part. Okay, so if you have literally any familiarity with the conversation about around panpsychism, and why would you? Okay, I shouldn't assume that, but if you're watching, if you've done any research, if for instance you have made a response video criticizing panpsychism, presumably you would have done, I don't know, any research about this subject at all. If you read any article, if you read the encyclopedia entry on panpsychism from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy or from the Internet Encyclopedia of Philosophy, if you listen to the contemporary defenders of panpsychism, you will hear over and over again Russellian panpsychism. Russellian, named after Bertrand Russell, who created this position called Russellian monism. And Russellian panpsychists take Bertrand Russell's thought here, Russellian monism, and they just, you know, kind of take it one step further. So again, if you have done like any research on this topic, which seems like obligatory if you're going to make a video about why panpsychism is stupid, if you've done any research on this topic, you will have come across Russellian panpsychism, because it is by far the most common variant of panpsychism that's around today. So just keep that in mind. And also, never mind, let's just watch this.
Russellian panpsychism.
We've been searching for days trying to find out what the fuck resalient means. Google has no proper definition to it. Even when we cut out resilient from any and all search results, salient is noticeable and or important. So what the fuck is resalient? This is driving us crazy. Are you even going to try to define your jargon? Or are you just going to pretend that you're so highbrow that the only people who would be on your channel already know what you're talking about? You're using so much special language here, dog. It's ridiculous. And it sounds like a sales pitch.
You are right, Chai.
And it sounds like a sales pitch. Anyway. That's just so funny that these people have just been absolutely flummoxed by trying to figure out what resalient panpsychism is. Like, I mean, first of all, the transcript of this episode is linked in the description. It's like, we've been searching for days. It's like, no, you haven't. You've been Googling resalient over and over again, which is I'm sorry, that's fucking hilarious. But like, you didn't look at the transcript of this episode, which was linked in the description of the video that you're playing clips of, where you would have seen Rosalian, as in Bertrand Rosalian, over and over again. Like, you looked everywhere except for the transcript of this episode and basically any article written about panpsychism in the past, like, 10 years, which, like, would have, you know, including the encyclopedia entries, including the fucking Wikipedia page, like, oh, we've been searching for days trying to figure out what this is. It's like, if you would have read anything about this view prior to making this video, which, by the way, look at this video, like, they're wearing costumes. Like, you know, there's like this green screen. Like, this is a, there's production value in what they're doing. And they didn't even like read an article about this thing. Like, that's just crazy to me. I've never been this underprepared for anything as they are for this. And it's like, anyway, it is just so funny. Resalient panpsychism. They, again, just read like literally anything about this subject, or I don't know, the transcript of the episode that you're talking about. Oh, we've looked everywhere for this. God damn. And then just accusing me of like having material interests here. It's a sales pitch. How would it be? I mean, you're saying that I'm just like alienating every man, woman, and child on earth by using this jargon and no one knows what it means. And then you're just like, yeah, it's a sales pitch. To who? Anyway, resalient panpsychism, man. That really got me the first time I heard it.
It does autocorrect it to resilient, but it does sound awfully familiar to me. Resalient. Salienti. Puella salience tunicam rompit. The jumping girl tore her tunic. And the guy writing down that sentence probably was the one looking underneath it. The jumping girl tore her tunic. Okay, that makes salient jumping. And you put re in front, which means again, and it turns into jumping again. The again jumping panpsychism. The again jumping panpsychism? It's a fancy word of saying that it's a researching fat, isn't it? Oh, grief.
Okay, so I thought that was just a painfully unfunny joke, but was that serious? Because that, like, that facepalm there, I don't know. It seemed like she thinks she was actually onto something there.
What other Timoribus Veteris of mine do you intend to summon next? And if you don't know what Timoribus Veteris is, well, don't worry, neither does most of our audiences. And that's okay. That's really okay. You don't have to know everything. You don't have to sound fancy all the time, Greeny. Why don't you join us, filthy plebs, and try to do this obscene thing called speaking like a common mortal? It is fun, I promise. And we have cookies too.
Oh my god.
They're both forms of
mouth. God, just the cringe. It's just, it hurts so badly. But, you know, the point of that video, as I've explained now multiple times, was not to introduce people who've never heard of this subject. I was assuming some level of background knowledge.
So physicalists cannot appeal to the success of the core theory, causal closure, or the dependence of the human mind on the brain as evidence favoring physicalism over Rosalian panpsychism.
I question your logic in this argument. You see, a giraffe and a lion are both a form of mammal. But while they can both give life birth, they don't both eat meat. So if eating meat is what is required, then the giraffe simply cannot compete, that poor animal. And if we're talking more concretely about your ideas, let us take a brain, for example, and look at it again. You see, both rely on the idea that the structure of a brain has influence on how you think. But while physicalism leaves it at that, panpsychism adds this kind of conscience something to it, for which we have no actual evidence. It's putting the word divinely guided in front of the word evolution and then claim that...
This is not unique to them, but like sometimes people will accuse panpsychism of being woo for saying that consciousness exists and is like, you know, just like physical states just are like consciousness, you know, like these physical events, they just are consciousness. And like, there are ways of making sense of that. You have to go into the kind of Russellian thesis, but like, there are ways to make coherent sense of saying that like physical brain events just are consciousness. And then panpsychists just say, well, maybe physical events just are consciousness, period. Like, you know, we already think that some physical events just are consciousness. Like, why would we discriminate? Like, there's sort of, you know, we are continuous with all matter, you know, like we're not made of some unique stuff. Consciousness seems to resist reduction. I mean, like, there are, you know, different arguments for panpsychism, not just the sort of intrinsic nature argument that I've been like dancing around. But yeah, there's the continuity argument, the vagueness argument. There are all sorts of reasons for adopting this sort of identity view that most physicalists are already, you know, in the orbit of, and just saying like, well, it's kind of more parsimonious to say that there's not this like eruption of a new nature at some arbitrarily specific point, you know, in the chain of, you know, a fetus developing or in the chain of evolutionary development. Not really getting into the weeds there at this moment, but anyway, it's just weird to call that woo exactly, because consciousness exists. It needs to be explained. We need to figure out where it arose, like where it emerged, if it emerged. Like, we need to, you know, these are just, it's just weird to say like, oh, this is woo, because you think that consciousness exists alongside or just is identical to physical events. It's like, well, if that's woo, if it's woo to say that like sometimes physical events just are identical with consciousness, then physicalism is woo.
Both these ideas are equally valid.
There's no spooky interaction or issues with causal closure or overdetermination.
No, wait, something's not right here.
Oh my god.
I'm just gonna ignore the fancy words and agree with your argument.
Yeah, these are not fancy words. These are like the common agreed upon terminology among everyone who talks about consciousness. Literally, like, what did I just say? Overdetermination? Causal closure? Interaction? Like, I mean, for Christ's sake, I literally cannot dumb it down more than that. Like, interaction, you know, like with dualism, there's the interaction problem. There's like two different, like with causal closure, the physical is causally closed. Like, this is not just pointless jargon. Like, these refer to ideas that everyone talks about, that are like, that physicalists talk about. Again, it's just you're exposing your lack of familiarity with this topic, not just with panpsychism, which again is fine, but it's like you don't even know about physicalism.
I'm just gonna ignore the fancy words and agree with your argument. There is no spooky whatever.
Interaction. Again, this is not like a jargon term. Interaction. How is that like a fancy word?
In fact, the problem with your panpsychism is not really so much with what there is, but with what there isn't, namely evidence.
If we're monists, all we can really do here is compare theoretical and explanatory virtues of different kinds of monism. But first we have to agree on the evidence that is to be...
I mean, just to say, like, oh, show me the evidence, show me the evidence. Show me the evidence for materialism, then. Inevitably, what you're going to do if I demand that you show evidence for materialism, what you're going to do is you're going to try to show that there's nothing but the brain. Again, that is evidence for monism, not for a specific subtype of monism. Like, at best, what you're going to offer is, you know, some reasons to doubt dualism. But the idea that you're going to be able to just show me evidence that the intrinsic nature of matter is non-experiential, that conscious states are fully reducible to physical brain states. You can't observe that. It's like, it's a metaphysical claim. Again, materialists don't seem to realize, they seem to think they're like above metaphysics, but you have to do metaphysics. You have to, like, I mean, you think something exists and you think that it's one way instead of another way. And ultimately, all of these beliefs you have about the way the physical world is are not going to be able to be settled by observation and experiment. And smart materialists realize this. Okay, this is not just like a non-physicalist thing. Like, physicalists who know what they're talking about are aware that they're doing metaphysics.
Explained.
All right, I bet. What evidence is there to be explained?
So consciousness. Let's into one fact about our world that doesn't get enough attention. Consciousness is unobservable, except in your own...
Like, look, the whole thing we're doing here is trying to explain consciousness. Like, anyway.
Consider the fact that the experience you're having right now is private. I will never know that you are conscious with the same degree of certainty that I know that I'm conscious.
That presupposes, however, that you are conscious in the first place.
I'm willing to make that assumption.
Which you can't truly know.
Yes, I can. I can know I'm conscious. Thank you.
Far more than you might think others are. But in neither case do you have any actual evidence. You can't just compare yourself to a non-conscious you. You can't tell if your experience is real or merely a simulation of sorts. Think of hallucinations.
I mean, this is such a stupid point. It's like I'm directly acquainted with my experience. Like, and I'm not directly acquainted with your experience. Like, again, this is just such a basic thing. This is not even like a thing that's, you need, it's not even like a philosophy of mind thing. This is just, you know, people talk about solipsism. People talk about the matrix. People like, even if, okay, oh, hallucinations or simulations. Okay, you are still, no matter what is true about that, you still are directly acquainted with your experience. It's not possible to doubt that, I don't think. Again, this whole point about, oh, well, things might not be as they appear. Okay, well, if they appear anyway at all to you, I mean, that's what we're talking about when we talk about consciousness. You can't really open up this is-seems gap with consciousness. There's a collapse of appearance and reality.
Feel real. You really experience them. But that doesn't make them real in the actual world around you. For simplicity's sake, it makes sense to acknowledge your experience and to just assume that you are conscious and move on with your life. But it's not enough to objectively prove, even to yourself, that you are actually truly conscious.
You know?
I mean, this is just, like, this was in response to me saying, you know that you're conscious, but you don't know that anyone else is conscious.
How you can tell how objectively conscious someone is? With a brain scan. Just saying.
When you look at me.
Okay, so with a brain scan, how do you tell someone is conscious? Without any self-report, without any, you know, I mean, like, that's just such a, it's so funny how they think that's like an own, where it's like, hey, ever heard of brain scans? It's like, oh, gee, I hadn't thought of brain scans. Tell me more. Like, look, you can't observe consciousness. You know with certainty that you are conscious. Even if you're in the matrix, you're still a conscious creature. Even if you're dreaming right now, you're still a conscious creature. But you don't know with the same degree of certainty that others are conscious. Because consciousness is unobservable. I mean, if, again, this is just like, and it's just like looking at a brain scan. I mean, like that does, again, because experience is unobservable, I don't know how to make this point any clearer, where it's just like looking at a brain scan tells you all kinds of, you know, facts about, you know, the electrochemical events of the brain, but it doesn't tell you if experience is associated with those. You only know about brain structure. You don't know if, you know, if you don't know what, or even if it's like anything to be that brain structure.
All you can observe are electrochemical brain events. You can't observe my experience, even though I can assure you it's real. So there's this concretely real phenomenon that can't be observed no matter what instruments you have. That's a pretty interesting fact about our world.
I find your point very intriguing. There is, in fact, no way for me to tell that you perceive yourself as real, that you have an I'm real experience. And we could showcase the problem of it by taking a computer and feeding it with AI and all that stuff. With our current knowledge and tools, there is no way for us to tell whether a computer truly perceives itself as real, similarly to how you do,
Ever heard of a brain scan?
Or whether it has simply learned to say that it perceives itself as real. You see, we are both on the same wavelength here. We both acknowledge
that... You're not on the same wavelength with your friend there. I mean, like, the conscious AI thing is another way to make this point. You know, we might think that AI is conscious. We might have a lot of reason to think because it's behavior, but we'll never know with certainty whether this, like, complex AI that we build in the future is or isn't conscious.
The same problem. The only difference between you and me is that you accept your experience and say, see, I'm feeling real, and you can't test it. Therefore, you can't test whether other consciousness exists, and therefore, panpsychism.
Well, I think you missed a few steps there, but yeah.
That's my reply to it is, how is my perception of myself not physical? I am aware of my presence. I can feel physical pain. I can think thoughts, and so on. Consciousness, at least if defined as our ability to actively experience our surroundings, can just as much be a process of our brain as our heartbeat. Let me try to clarify what I mean. When you are a new...
No, look, I'm with you. Again, a lot of people who challenge panpsychism just seem to be like, have you ever considered that, like, you know, your brain just, you know, is like identical with your experiences? And it's like, yeah, of course, I'm a monist. I think that human consciousness and the human brain, just like, I think it's just the same thing from two different perspectives. It's one thing to be a human being. It's another thing to be a human being observing another human being. That's where we get this epistemic distinction between mind and matter, but it's not like an ontological distinction. There's only one stuff there, just two sides of one coin. And that's basically what a lot of physicalists believe. But then I make further arguments to say that, like, matter in general is the way that human matter is, you know, but, like, and of course, when I say human matter, I just mean matter that's arranged like a human. Anyway, let's go back here.
At least if
defined. Oh, yeah, yeah. And she's also, like, kind of saying, okay, well, if consciousness is defined like such and such, I defined consciousness in the episode. And, like, again, it's just the sort of thing that you'd be familiar with if you had read or listened to basically anything about panpsychism before you started talking about it, which is that panpsychists think that phenomenal consciousness is consciousness in the relevant sense here. Like, the fact that it's like something to be, which was popularized, that idea of, you know, characterizing consciousness was made popular by Thomas Nagel. It's an extremely widely cited way of characterizing phenomenal consciousness. And that's what panpsychists think is, you know, everywhere or fundamental. Yeah, so it's like all this stuff about, like, all these, like, higher level functions and these, like, more complicated aspects of consciousness that she's talking about. It's like, yeah, I'm not talking about that. Like, I know that we're, you know, we're in the realm of human consciousness right now. Like, that's what you're talking about. But again, it's just, it's clear based on the episode. Like, it's clear in context, and it's clear if you have any familiarity with this subject that I'm talking about phenomenal consciousness, just the fact that it's like something to be. I'm not talking about all these high-level cognitive functions that she's talking about.
And as our ability to actively experience our surroundings can just as much be a process of our brain as our heartbeat. Let me try to clarify what I mean. When you are a new driver, your eyes are usually glued to the street, and you are tense and fully aware of everything that you're doing and everything that's going on. After a few years, however, you lean back in your chair, drive down the exact same road, and you're hardly aware of what you're actually doing. You are, in a sense, driving on autopilot. In both cases, you're doing the very same thing. But in one, you're actually conscious about it, and in the other, you're not. It seems to me that the only difference between these two actions is the amount of effort your brain has to put into the task. It's processing power, for lack of a better term. Consciousness, to me, doesn't seem non-physical, none whatsoever. So where exactly does this panpsychism...
Oh, that's an argument from personal experience, actually. You're just saying consciousness doesn't seem non-physical to you? I mean, those arguments you gave don't really have anything to do with phenomenal consciousness. You're talking about, again, you're talking about things that have nothing to do with what I was talking about. Not that what she was just talking about, like, isn't worth discussing, but I'm just saying it has nothing to do with what I was talking about.
But yeah, come into this picture.
Has it never occurred to you that these electrochemical brain events are the process of experiences being processed?
He said to the panpsychist. Like, yes, of course I have. Like, again, you don't have a basic grasp of this position when you're saying that, like, have you ever considered that maybe the physical just is consciousness? Like, yes, of course. Again, have you... it's so fucking aggravating where they don't understand the basics of this position, where it's like, have you ever considered that just the physical and the experiential just are the same thing? Yes. Yes, I have, to answer your question. And also just, oh my God, this one particular part here.
Has it never occurred to you that these electrochemical brain events...
Is that too, like, complicated? Is that too jargony for you? Electrochemical brain events. Like, he puts up the monocle like I'm being a douchebag by saying electrochemical brain. What the fuck should I call them? Brain doings or something? What would make you happy? What, like, every term there, electrochemical brain events, is carefully selected based on the stuff that we've been talking about, where I'm emphasizing the structural limited nature of the information that physical science gives us, and the parts that are relevant to the stuff that's going on in between your ears is the electrochemical events of your brain. Again, I don't know how to dumb that down any further. Sorry for, like, using jargon there, but what the fuck am I supposed to call it? I literally don't know how to make it simpler.
Are the process of experiences, yes, being processed? That. Like, that is the experience. That's the code of it all. That's what that is. Unless you mean, like, us watching you experiencing, for example, falling and hitting the ground face first, in which case we can definitely observe and record your experience. We can catch that experience on our phone and put it here on the YouTube forever. The problem you seem to have here is that you're closing the door on everything. There's a big fat yet that we think should be at the end of these affirmations you're making about how this concretely real phenomenon can't be observed no matter the instruments. Yet.
Okay, I forgot about this part. This is so funny. So, like, he's saying that, like, someday there will be microscopes where you can zoom in to a brain and you will see experiences. Yeah, I respectfully disagree. I don't think that we are ever going to invent microscopes that are so powerful that we can see conscious experiences. I think we're just going to keep seeing brain events. So yeah, sorry that I'm not holding my breath that we're going to invent some, like, you know, something that can directly acquaint an observer with the experiences of a brain in the same way that you are just by virtue of being that brain. Like, I think that there's a distinction, once again, between being a system and between being a system that is observing some other system. Like, I don't think there's an ontological distinction here. I think there's just one stuff, and that the difference here, like the sort of intuitive duality that we're born with, according to, you know, people like Paul Bloom, comes from this kind of epistemic position, this distinction between being a system and between observing a system. But yeah, I'm not holding out for the invention of a microscope that can zoom into your brain and see your experiences such that you will be, you know, you will have this direct acquaintance with my experiences in the same way that you have a direct acquaintance with your experiences, but with no one else's. I mean, that's like, I've never met a person who thinks that we will invent instruments that will do that.
And furthermore, something tells us that you wouldn't be looking for such technology and instruments.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not waiting for a microscope that can zoom in to your brain and then suddenly there's an experience there that you're looking at through the microscope.
Even if they did exist and we waved them in front of your face. You sound extremely sure of this, like you've already made up your mind about it. In our field of work, That's not good science.
Everyone has made up their mind about this. Like materialists and physicalists and dualists and panpsychists. No one is waiting for technology of the kind that you're talking about.
Or good philosophy.
Assuming monism, there must be this interior to matter, as it were.
Ugh, you know what they say about assuming.
Always assume the worst.
There's what it looks like from the outside.
That is another one. This is like the personal experience thing. Just, it's like this, I don't even know, like a Pavlovian response almost. It's just like they hear a word and then like, I don't even know what the term is for this. They just hear a word and then it's like associated with all this other stuff in their head. Even though in substance, it's like the argument from experience thing was one of those where I used the word experience to characterize phenomenal consciousness. And they're like, oh, he's making an argument from personal experience. And it's like, just the most baffling possible mistake. And then here's another one of those.
It's not good science or good philosophy.
Assuming monism, there must be this interior to matter, as it were.
Ugh, you know what they say about assuming.
Just said it. Assuming monism, like as in assuming the falsity of dualism. Like, again, this is not even a philosophy thing. Like, you're not, it's not just that you're not familiar with philosophy. You're not familiar with how thinking works. Sometimes people say, hey, assume this point. Then let's like move from there. Like, let's just assume this for the sake of argument and then move on rather than just get hung up. Like, so what should I have done there? Should I have like made a bunch of arguments against dualism before I finished that sentence? I just said, assuming dualism is false. Comma, and then just continued on. Like, yeah, assuming monism for the sake of argument. Let's see where that leads. Again, this is not even a philosophy thing. This is just a thinking thing.
Always assume the worst.
Oh, facepalm. Like from the outside,
observable brain activity. And then there's what it looks like from this private interior, first person subjective experience. It's like there are dual aspects to matter, an internal aspect and an external aspect. And yet we're free to believe there's only one concretely existing stuff here.
Oh, I have a very, very fascinating hypothesis on
Let's speed this up.
But it's a little complicated, so follow me. Yeah, follow me closely on this one. What if there is no difference? What if the so-called internal aspect is in truth nothing more than the external aspect, just from a different, slightly more elusive perspective?
There's what it's like.
That's literally what I just said, you fucking idiot. That is literally what I just said. I said that there's this one substance, there's one stuff, but there's like what it's like to be that stuff and what it, and then, you know, observing that stuff. It's just a different perspective on the same thing. There's no reason to be a dualist here. Like, that is quite literally what I just said.
There is no difference. What if the so-called...
Well, you can't say there's no difference because they obviously have different properties. Like, brains have different properties than conscious experiences. Like, conscious experiences are private, for instance. Holding out, I'm not holding my breath for the consciousness microscope, like that other guy is, but yeah, like brain events are not private. You can observe them through a microscope. Conscious events are private. You can't observe them no matter what instruments you have. And yeah, so it's just, it seems weird to say that they're like literally identical in this, like in the sense they have the same properties or something like that. Like, so it seems like it's impossible to avoid some kind of duality here without totally diminishing what you mean by consciousness or totally diminishing what you mean by the physical. Like, if you want to, you know, leave those two concepts completely unedited, the physical and the conscious mind, like, then you're going to be a dualist. Like, you're going to have to reimagine what is meant by consciousness or what is meant by the physical if you want to be a monist. I think that's pretty uncontroversial. Like, idealists do that. They reimagine what it means for something to be physical. Materialists reimagine what it means, what consciousness means. And I think that most materialism amounts to explicit illusionism or like a semantically obscure form of illusionism. But there's just no way to make these things identical without diminishing one of them in some sense. And that's what I try to do with structuralism, with Russellian monism, with the idea that the physical, what we mean when we say physical, really, it's just these extrinsic behavioral relational properties that don't tell us everything there is to know about that physical stuff. Yeah, like there's an intrinsic nature to matter. So I reimagine what is meant by physical. And that's the only way to collapse these things into some kind of monism, is to reimagine, you know, consciousness or the physical. But yeah, it's like dual aspect monism. You know, there is this duality, but it is really like monism. Like these things that are physical properties, what we call the physical, it's just what consciousness looks like from the outside. Just like my brain, I think, is just what consciousness looks like from the outside. Yeah, but again, like these people are materialists, and panpsychism has a lot in common with materialism. Like Galen Strawson considers it just to be a form of physicalism. There's a reason for that. It's not just a tricky rhetorical move. Like, it's because physicalism and panpsychism actually do have a lot in common. But anyway, just again, just this condescending fucking shit of just like, have you ever considered that like the physical events just are conscious events? It's like, yeah, I'm a panpsychist. Yes, I have. I have considered that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Nothing more than the external aspect, just from a different, slightly more lucid perspective.
That's what I said.
What it's like to be that stuff, and there's what it's like to be that stuff observing some other stuff.
What it's like to be stuff observing other stuff, you say?
Yes.
Say, we wonder what it's like to be the rock who observes you as you are being stuff.
Or how about you observing a rock? Again, what is confusing about what I'm saying? You are some stuff, and you observe other stuff. I'm just at a loss with how to make this simpler for you people.
Stuff. A rock can do that according to panpsychism, right?
No, it can't. Oh my fucking god. I forgot that was in there too. A rock can observe
you as you are being stuff. A rock can do that according to panpsychism, right? And all the other permutations of matter, we imagine. It's just stuff like the rest of us, after all. What we're getting at is...
Yeah, the arrangement is different, though. And besides, like, panpsychism, again, if you had read literally anything about this, you would have found out that panpsychists take fundamental reality to be, the intrinsic nature of matter is experience involving. Fundamental reality is conscious, and then things that are combined in a certain way. And exactly how combination occurs, that's what determines whether or not something is a subject. But like, basically, like, I don't think any panpsychists think rocks are conscious. The only people who are even talking about conscious rocks are materialists who are eager to misunderstand. And that's basically it, which is something I've said in this video, I think. Yes, I did. I just remembered. I used almost that exact phrase where I said, like, you know, I literally handled the rocks are conscious thing. And then I said, you know, the only people talking about conscious rocks are like materialists who like don't understand the view. In this video that they're playing clips of, which obviously we're almost at the end of theirs. They didn't watch the whole 7.5 minute video. anyway, it's just so funny. They claim like, oh, we searched for days trying to figure out what resilient panpsychism was. And it's like, so in all your research, you couldn't finish the 7.5 minute video. Anyway,
not saying anything here. This is just going around in circles. You're doing nothing by going on about this circular charade. This feels oddly spirit sciencey, and that brings that feeling back.
Spirit sciencey. I'm just talking about consciousness. Like, consciousness exists. We know that. And I'm just trying to find a place for it in nature. So if that seems spirit sciencey to you, then I mean, that's your problem. And besides, you're a materialist. You already accept that, you know, physical matter just is consciousness, at least in some contexts, at least some of the time. I'm just saying it is all the time. Like, again, it's just an extension of what you already have accepted. The hard part is already over.
Again, that makes us feel like there's something going on here that we've yet to define, as though there's some more than just woo going on here.
I could spend hours pulling on anyone.
Okay, there's more than just... First of all, nothing I've said is woo. It's like the combination of different ideas, like structuralism about physics and, you know, a certain conception of experience as the intrinsic nature of physical structure. And none of this is woo. This is just analytic philosophy. And the idea that something more is going on, I don't have any ulterior motives other than trying to solve the hard problem of consciousness. That's the main thing that even brought me to this point to begin with.
One of these threads, but now is as good a time as any to address some common misconceptions about panpsychism.
Oh, a very good sentence to end this part.
Oh, wow. We've never seen so much gibberish getting rinsed out of someone's ears. Oh, hey, wait, put that back in. That's earwax. You'll need that still. Thanks for coming, everybody. Iset deserves all the support. Everybody who supports her, that's you, are awesome, excellent people.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I would like to extend an apology to T-Jump. I've repeatedly accused him of offering the worst critique of panpsychism that's ever been leveled. I'm sorry. I mean, like, this, like, I mean, T-Jump said that geology, like, proves that panpsychism is false. Maybe that is dumber than that. No, this video is definitely dumber than that. So, anyway, there you have it. Quite possibly the worst critique of panpsychism I think I've ever heard, ever. Yeah. So I think I guess I'll just end it there. Thank you for watching. I've been Emerson Green. You can subscribe to Walden Pod or Counter Apologetics, my two podcasts, on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever they keep podcasts. And obviously, I also upload them to YouTube. Yeah, so if you want to learn about panpsychism, I have a playlist on my account where I put all that stuff out there. And yeah, don't be like these people. Read something before you go out in public and talk about how it's stupid. Yeah, I mean, this is pretty terrible.